Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to African Conversations with your host, Charles Williams. Today, we have in the studio Samuel Reynolds. Samuel Reynolds is the founder of the Astrology Career Institute and the author of Horoscopes for Ebony.com and the Practicing Astrology blog. Mr. Reynolds has been teaching and practicing astrology for over 20 years. The Astrology Career Institute focuses on creating rewarding career opportunities for people interested in astrology. Their mission is to professionalize astrology as well as release its potential to enable our people to find clarity, realize our potential. Samuel Reynolds Astrology Career Institute is constantly developing new educational programs and seminars for its members, as well as astrology enthusiasts interested in learning what astrology has to offer. Welcome to African Conversations, Samuel Reynolds.
Thank you, Charles Williams. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing better. Doing so much better.
Oh, were you ill?
No, I'm just glad to speak with you about this subject.
Oh, okay. Now that we're on the air, you're doing better. I got you.
Yeah. Just been looking forward to this conversation because this is a whole new frontier for, I believe, our community to really get a chance to explore the divine science, as it has been called. So,
yes.
If you don't mind, you could tell me, how did you get introduced to astrology?
My pleasure. I got to ask a question. Is the music going to be on the whole time?
Oh, I can turn down.
Is that just the intro?
Okay. I can turn down. It's down.
Right. It just creates this kind of like, whoa, okay. I feel like I should get into a different groove.
So what I want.
It's because
I should be like, yeah, blood. So what happened was. That's exactly what I want.
I was chilling with a and broad, and I was like, yeah. So just got to
right. That's conversation, right? We sit around.
I mean, you definitely have this vibe that is mellowing me out. So I'm just like, yeah. Okay.
That's exactly what he's going for.
Wonderful.
That was beautiful. He knows how to. I'm going to watch your science all along there. Look at that. Your kung fu is strong there, Charles.
Thank you. I call African conversations instead of African interviews. It's like, you know, you get a chance to listen to bros. We sitting around rapping about the science, and then like, wow, you know. And the music.
Mm-hmm. That's how you do it, but I peeped your... I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I peeped your card.
Okay, no. It just adds atmosphere. So, you know, if they're listening, they're doing whatever chores around, they can, and it adds interest in case they get bored with me or whatever, my personality, the music keeps it hooked.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Okay. So to answer your question, because the listener is like, is he going to answer the question? I was in graduate school in the African American Studies Department at Temple University, under the guidance and I guess the initiation of Dr. Malifi Kente-Asante, who's well known for his books on Afrocentric principles, the Afrocentric idea, and Afrocentricity are among his most popular books. And I had, after doing a research assignment for class, made a friend with someone who was really into astrology. And I'm born on the cusp between Scorpio and Sagittarius, November 22nd. And I had always avoided talking about being born on the cusp because I never felt like there was a conclusive answer. So I either would say I'm both or neither. And when I was a Christian, I would say I was born under the sign of the cross, and that's all you needed to know. So when I started talking to my friend, she's like, oh, no, you should look into astrology. And I was very skeptical for the same reasons that Jill Yvette kind of talked about when we were talking briefly about, you know, you look at horoscopes, you look at dream books, and you look at these descriptions of people, which in many ways are kind of generalized, and I never really seemed to fit all the things associated with Scorpio or all the things associated with Sagittarius. Well, I was looking for a Kabbalistic book, or kind of a neo-Kabbalistic book, called the 6, 7, 8 Books of Moses, and then there's also the 9 and 10 Books of Moses as well. Have you heard of those books, Charles?
Yes, I have. I have never studied them, but I have heard of them.
Okay, so I was looking for that, and there was a bookstore up in North Philadelphia where I was who had it, because I had been shopping around for it. And I went up there to get the book, and turns out that the owner of the bookstore was an astrologer, and he started talking to me about astrology, and I was like, oh, okay. And I had some extra cash because I had gotten an assistantship, and I had gotten my student loans. So I was a little flush with cash, and I felt like, well, I could splurge, especially as it was the fall and near my birthday. I'm really figuring out what this was about. So I went to get the reading, and I got to tell you, for the first 15 minutes, I thought it was just complete baloney. Because, you know, he would say things like, well, your chart says, and he had done the chart by hand, so it was one of those brothers who did everything by hand. He had a grand old wheel in front of me, and it had all these little glyphs in it and pictures. And he says to me, you know, your chart says that you're a pretty smart dude, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I didn't say anything, but I was thinking, I just told you I was a PhD student. Chances are I'm not an idiot. So you telling me I may be a smart dude is like telling me, like, wow, you breathe oxygen. So I really, you know, was like, okay, then I guess he's just kind of extrapolating on things that he already can perceive. But then the conversation took a very interesting turn when he started talking about my family. Now, I'm still to this day, in some permutation, very guarded about my family. I keep a lot of other things closer to my chest. And so he started talking about the dynamics between my mother, my father, and my brother just before I was born. And with some measure of specificity, like, you know, my brother did such and such, which affected my mom's pregnancy because of something in my father. Now, that sounds pretty specific to me. Does that sound specific to you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You know, to kind of mention those players specifically and then say the dynamic, I was like, how can you possibly look at these squiggly lines and know all this detail? And he got all avuncular and jovial. He's an Aries. He's like, oh, it's right here in your chart. You look in here, and it's a square between your sun and your Jupiter. And you look here with them. I was like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. That's when I knew I was a Scorpio, because he had ferreted out my secrets. And I literally kind of was, I guess, defensive and almost went a little bit on the attack. Like, well, how can you really know this? And because I had been quiet and just kind of observing before. And he still maintained his happy disposition and explained things to me patiently, and then he went on with the reading. Well, I just knew it was a trick. So I just had to figure out what was the trick. And so I spent the next 10 years learning about astrology and doing charts, even with four people, four friends, and eventually only on a donation basis, really, for the most part, looking to uncover the trick. Only to discover that it was real.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much how I came to astrology. And then it became much more after 10 years. It took 10 years for me to really accept that I believed in it. And then it took off into other directions.
Yes.
That's pretty much how I got into it.
Yeah, I can see. Because that's what really, whenever I'm, you know, sharing whatever detail that at my novice level, I was with other people, and I was able to communicate some information about the relationship between the parents, you know, and it is kind of shocking for those people, you know, when they first hear that, and they're like, you know, Matter of fact, it sometimes frightens them a little. Well, I learned it frightens them. Sometimes they want to, like, move away. Like, this guy should not know this.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like their intimacy or privacy has been violated. Not
right.
Like in a
creepy.
Negative. Yeah. You know, and I'm like, that's what we're here to talk about, because I believe that that's the part. I believe this science that's written, this language written across the expanse of the heavens, is written to help you know yourself. You know,
right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so a lot of us are afraid to become deeply acquainted and familiar with ourselves at that level, and then I believe that's a real introduction to true growth. Is to face those fears of the unknown or the hidden.
That's true.
And so, you know, like I'm glad you talked about your studies at that temple. And how long did it take for you to possibly, I guess, try to connect or realize how astrology can be used to help African people? Should we, you know, take it seriously?
Well, I got that. Pretty early on. I mean, now keeping in mind I was still a skeptic,
mm-hmm.
but I kept an intention kind of softly and gently in my heart and my mind. And the intention really was I did become convinced that we as a people, we seem to often gravitate toward a general story of explaining our pain and our pathos,
mm-hmm.
without looking at our individual narratives. So, you know, I have written a poem where I kind of reference how a young woman, had changed her name to Ayo when, you know, daddy was trying to be her man. Like, we sometimes will look for Africanity as a way to kind of solve our problems and become the quote-unquote knowledge of self without
right.
dealing with the pain of our own actual narratives. And astrology definitely gave me a window into understanding that there's a specificity that one could arrive at to look at one's pain and to look at not just a collective narrative, but to really focus in on what becomes the individual narrative. So there are people, you know, who, you know, were stick-up kids around the way who decide to change their name to Musa as reflective of their African heritage without looking at why they're still stick-up kids. But maybe
right.
they have a different hustle.
Right.
You know? So if you don't, especially, I find this even more true with men who often resist astrology. But if you're not willing to look at the deeper recesses of your pain, I don't care what you change your name into. I don't care what kind of knowledge about our ancestors that we learn or you learn, or how many languages you can speak that are indigenous to Africa. If you're not dealing with your own personal narrative, you're missing the whole point.
Right. I mean, we see that. Well, I interpret that as when I see those particular people who are not facing themselves, as they're trying to use it as fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They're using the collective narrative as a mean to escape themselves in the name of finding themselves.
Correct. That's well put. Mm-hmm. I agree.
And so, you know, like, you know, studying astrology helped me, you know, come to terms with, you know, many of my own issues that I'm going to say that it is having astrology is not making it easier for me to come to terms with it, because without studying it, I could easily ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to open that box. We have to go into that room and see
right.
what's inside that room and deal with those issues that's in that room. And it's tough.
Right.
I think it's probably one of the toughest jobs of your life.
I agree.
Is to face yourself.
Right.
And I'm not saying that I'm necessarily doing excellent at it, but I'm doing it.
Right. I mean, I think that could be true for all of us. I don't think the issue is whether we can always evaluate how well we are doing it or have done it, it's more so to be committed to the work of it.
Right, right. Because, you know, I guess we, right, because if you're not doing anything, you're definitely failing. So
right.
The least you can do is try and continue to.
Yeah.
And don't give up.
Right. You know, I liken astrology to this thing, this analogy. I mean, I have several analogies, but one of them is, you know, you were born with a garden, and there are things that are in your garden that you can use that can nourish you, and then there are things in your garden that you could continue to grow that could poison you, and the sun shines on them all. What becomes the difference is the consciousness you develop and paying attention and the alertness of knowing what's in your garden so you know what to harvest and to what kind of thresh out in order to prune. Recognizing that the weeds will continue to grow, but you can focus on the things you need to grow and kind of kill the weeds.
Right.
And astrology that shows you what's in your garden.
I love that analogy. Because
thank you.
Even those weeds, like some people think dandelion, like all those weeds, they actually serve a purpose.
That's true.
They're medicinal. Like you having a blog about Mars and Saturn as malefic planets. And
right.
And you discuss how Mars and Saturn can be malefic if you're living at a worldly level. But
correct.
If you're trying to ascend, then you can see them as means of transformation, unlocking
exactly.
You know, a potential.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Saturn. Saturn is my favorite planet, actually.
Right. Yeah, one of my, yeah, I'm Capricorn rising, the great
okay,
teacher.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think Saturn's one of my, I mean, because he's clear. And, you know, a lot of people misinterpret what Saturn wants. Saturn, I've been calling for the last, I don't know, 6 months or a little more, I've been calling him, you know, the sit your ass down planet. And
oh, yeah.
The reason why I call him that is he comes around and just says, sit down. And people can interpret that as being scolded or as prompting depression. But it could just mean, sit out of the game and concentrate on the things you need to concentrate on. Or it could be, it's time to write your book. Or it could be, why don't you rest? Or, you know, as if we're talking to Chris Brown or Kanye West, you making a fool of yourself, son. Why don't you just sit down, chill out, cool your heels, and figure it out? So Saturn comes around to really get us to sit with ourselves. So I think there's a lot of opportunities with Saturn.
Yes. Yeah, I've come to understand that as an influence and that effect as his teacher. All your lessons, at least your major lessons, you get to learn to get them from centers. Like mine's in retrograde, you know, in the fifth house. Opposition to my Jupiter, I call Jupiter the Zodiac, you know, in Hebrew, you know, astrology, the sage. And so it feels like I think I'm trying to expand, get big from britches, and that Saturn slows me down.
Mm-hmm.
And so it evidently, I would be trying to do things that aren't in my best interest, if I did not have that effect to like have that restricting, influence. It keeps me within the circle, you know, of protection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the way I interpreted it. You know, so I can, you know, get my lessons without trying to skip
right.
school. You know, right. Not that
well,
idea.
That's a very good way of putting it. Without trying to skip school.
Right. I would like to segue that into the African diaspora community as a whole is in desperate need of learning or overcoming lessons that, you know, we collectively, like you say, on an individual lesson we could learn, and we individuals make up the collective. And if, you know, we could possibly look at understanding transits and returns you know, and as a means of helping people get a better hold on their personal development. Would you possibly think that would be, you know, great help?
I do think, but you know, there's something to be said about another dimension of that. You know, according to a Harris poll from 2003, 47% of those polled, black people polled, believe in astrology. I want you to take that in for a second.
Okay.
47%. That's nearly half the number of people polled who believe in astrology. Now, what's significant about that is that 29% of the whites polled said that they believed in astrology. Now, that's an 18-point spread between the number of blacks and the number of whites. Now, here's what's deep about that. What's deep about that is that 98 to 99%, and I'm being generous, actually.
Yeah.
We could almost say with some solidity and confirmation almost, that 99% of the people who are in the public eye responsible for the discourse in astrology, whether they're writing for magazines or writing books or presenting or doing charts publicly, are white folk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not knocking it in the sense that, you know, I'm not saying about those particular folks that, you know, that's just dastardly, whatever. They're doing whatever they're doing, whatever they kind of learned initially from darker-skinned people thousands of years ago. But the one thing I will say is that I think there is a community of black folk, or an obvious community of black folk, who are attentive to astrology, because we had the highest numbers of any ethnicity.
Right.
Now, I shouldn't say Asians. I don't think Asians were included in that mix, but of Latinos, of people from the African diaspora,
mm-hmm.
And this is just in America, I believe, and whites, we had the highest.
Right.
So I think I hear what you're saying, and I mostly agree with the spirit of it, but I think there's another narrative that we aren't paying attention to, where there is some kind of discourse happening, but the question is, we don't know its quality, and we don't know fully why this hasn't become a bigger thing among us.
I agree, because I didn't know about your poll, but I would have guessed, like you said, 98 to, you know, even more European people of European descent getting a lot of, I guess, exposure, what have you, for their discourses on astrology. What I did not know is that nearly half of the black people, African people polled in the study that you read, believed in astrology as as an ancient science. That's what I didn't know. Based on the people that I interact with, I know I would have not even thought that it was that many.
Right.
And so I understand basically the environment where the people poll were part of the country. Like, I live here in the South, in Louisiana. So you might get different results down here. But
I also think there's another thing too. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think this is a common issue that happens with polling, and it's something that I'm not going to say is unique even to the South, but I'm just going to make an analogy, which is the best I can do.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting, the polling for the Republican candidates this year in Alabama and Mississippi, because it was hard to really see who was going to be ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it turns out that Rick Santorum won Alabama. I can't quite remember, but I think he did. But they really couldn't get a pulse on the polling. And I think that's because there may be a culture in particular areas of the country, which is, you know, not to kind of completely disclose what you really think. So one thing that may be happening, you know, there are people who are in the church who believe in astrology, will look at their horoscope but won't tell you.
Right. Right.
You know, because if they're trying to be this kind of complete Christian, they have everything to lose in telling you, even though they may be paying attention to it or talk about it with their friends. Like, no, girl, he's a Taurus. Well, that don't mean anything, girl, because, you know, he, we believe in the Lord. Oh, that's right. Yeah, we believe in the Lord. The Lord. We got the Lord.
Now, I have heard that. And oddly enough, but ironically, I've only heard women. And this is before I got into astrology. I would hear women mention a person's sun sign and as an indicator of what to expect with regards to their behavior, a set of things. But, you know, like I said, after I started getting listen to people more carefully as time went on, I would know they would just stick to that and in terms of, you know, I guess revealing their interest in astrology. But it never you know, really went any farther than that for what they would share. And so, like, they would just, I guess, like you said, they would just, you know, they would not admit that very well in this part of the country, perhaps. But I do believe a lot of people have taken notice of these things, even people who don't really realize, who've been told by their clerics that astrology is, you know, is not something that's not approved of in the Bible. Matter of fact, I'm doing an episode on another program I host called African Aramean Scriptures, where we look at Hebrew and Aramaic words, and we examine the words. We look at the roots and the derivatives, and we, you know, it's looked at, and we examine its usage as the ancient, you know, Hebrews and Arameans when they wrote the Israelite scriptures, writings. To try to get a real flavor for what the people were communicating in their writings, as opposed to our 20th century European colonial mind, and we try to superimpose that onto the ancient writing, and it's difficult to try to comprehend. So we try to divest ourselves of our way of thinking and look at from their point of view, and so in doing that, I have an episode coming up where it's going to look at mystical practices mentioned in the Bible. We're going to look at the words, look at the usage, everything, how to describe. And as a matter of fact, the word for astrology that's quoted in Deuteronomy 18, chapter 18, verse 10, that word is not the word for astrology. It's the word that's analogous to the word yoga. To join.
Oh, okay.
And so now I'm like thrown off. I'm like, what is this about this joining thing? So I'm working on that. I've been working on it for like about a few weeks. It's about 10 words I'm looking at. But that one is one I'm ready to get to understand. What it was, it's a misspelling. I mean, people, they use, it's a, the word for astrology is hey, bet, resh. And the word in the text is het, bet, resh. And so it looks similar, but they just ascribe the meaning to it. So we're gonna work on that, and we'll talk about that. But that's a good segue in it, how the church is looked at by people in the African American Christian community. So I like that. What indulge us, what astrological features did you recognize in the Bible as you transitioned from, you know, your time as a Baptist minister, skeptic, to now an astrologer?
Okay, let me make sure I'm understanding your question. Like, how did scripture relate to astrology, or how did astrology relate to scripture? Is that kind of what you're asking me?
As you began to, you know, develop and you start learning about astrology, and you thought back into your reading of the Bible, and you learned what, and you started, you start opening it up, and you're like, hey, it's astrology all over this book.
Well, you know, it actually, it was part of it. You know, I didn't recognize it at the time completely, because I wasn't arcing toward astrology in my mind, but it started when I was 18, 19 years old, a freshman in college, and I was reading a book by the renowned writer and scholar Alan Watts, who has written about Buddhism more so at length than he has written about Christianity, but he wrote a book called Myth and Ritual in Christianity. And in that particular book, he documents a lot of the things that other scholars, that many of your listeners may be aware of, they document as well, like John G. Jackson, like J. A. Rogers, and that essentially that the myths and the ideas embedded in Christianity have had earlier antecedents. And what is unmistakable in all those earlier antecedents is kind of the journey of the sun through the telling of the story. Like when we look at the idea of the virgin, and when we look at the idea of the virgin birth, and, you know, especially with Aset and Haru, and then, you know, the coming forth by day, and then you look at the 12 months related to the 12 tribes of Israel, and then the 12 disciples. Then as you look at, even in Genesis 1, the breakdown of the lights and the firmaments and the separation of the two. And you see, and especially the compelling chapter in Job that talks about what happens in the signs. And Orion and one's awareness of astronomy in it. You see compelling evidence again and again that astrology is, as you just said, throughout the whole book. And for me, at that time, it became a signal or some kind of forecast that somehow the Bible wasn't an authentic book. Now, I would amend that statement now. I mean, I would look at it in a whole different way. But for me, as you know, looking in retrospect, as you were just saying, initially, and when I say initially, 19, roughly into my 30s, kind of learning more about astrology and seeing, you know, how it had been so much in the Bible, even though I preached against it when I was a minister, I came to really recognize that it does inform a large portion of the book. You know, and there's even the idea of the solstice, you know, kind of Moses holding up his arms in order to kind of have the length of the day, and keeping the sun. That literally is keeping the sun still, which is how the ancients experienced the sun. Solstice means sun stands still.
Right.
Literally, solstice. So, you know, you see it throughout all the different aspects of Scripture. I actually even have a metaphysical reading. How I came to the Garden of analogy is a metaphysical reading of the Garden of Eden. I believe the flaming sword is the sun.
Okay.
So the sun is what shields us from being able to go beyond and back into the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably a different conversation.
That's a matter of fact, my wife was showing me a video. Someone had, mm-hmm. they were discussing this, some series of constellations that appeared to make a sword, and they described that as being the flaming sword. But in yours, you described, your analogy, is the sun. And so this is my second time hearing, you know, I guess concepts on the sword, the ever-turning sword. That's how I remember. I was translating that out of Hebrew into English in one of my biblical Hebrew exercise books. I might bring that out one day. We can discuss that if you know, are righteous, whatever. Show you what
yeah.
I did.
Mm-hmm. But that's one thing I look at. So, like I said, the Bible is littered with you know, references, and I think, you know, some people interpret some of the sayings from the Old Testament, especially from those of the prophets, where they make mistranslations, as you mentioned, and also other translations about how you know, astrology is evil, or, you know, if you're a Muslim, haram, or somehow it occludes the truth. And I've actually developed a nuanced perspective on that. My perspective is, one, I think the Bible often calls out false astrologers.
Oh, yeah.
And you can have people who use astrology for evil or just incorrectly, much like you can have false prophets.
That's right. I'm glad you mentioned it, because I was studying Joel Dobbins, Rabbi Joel Dobbins' book, the retitled Kabbalistic Astrology, the old title.
Right.
You're familiar with it. And he was talking about in Isaiah, how they were it was described about astrologers using, or they were as being condemned for the way they were using it to oppress the people. And looking at types of prophets that is also described in, I think, 18th chapter of Deuteronomy, these people who have this mystical ability, they have they're seers and speakers, you know, they have power, and they deceive humankind into using the signs for their own desire for control, as opposed to understanding, which you've written about that on your blog as well.
Correct. And then another practice that most people don't take into account is that, you know, the advent of a one God really was a powerful moment in human history that people don't fully recognize. And whether you want to start with the idea of one God coming from Amenhotep IV, who became Akhenaten, or you want to look at it with the articulation of Musa, or if you even want to go back, quote-unquote, farther and look at Ibrahim or Abraham, whether you want to look at it that way or whatever, is that the idea of one God means that there is one primary cause for all the manifestations in the cosmos. That was not the worldview of much of the ancient world as it related to astrology. So one looked to different asterisms and then astral religions and making homage to these different deities in order to kind of ensure success. So you might go to Mars, you might go to Marduk, you might go to Baal. And all these different astrologers would ascribe powers to these particular planets without realizing they were all manifestations of a mysterious, unmanifest source. So that's one of the reasons why these traditions were called false. Because the believers, in looking at these asterisms and soothsayers, did not direct their attention toward the primary cause. They looked at all these multiple gods to appease, and so they kind of looked just at the signs without looking at the real unmanifest manifestation.
Right.
Which is divine. And that's very key. I think a lot of people miss that point because they don't know the worldview of that time.
Right. Yeah, I was looking at studying equinoxes after reading your I finished your article about the Age of Aquarius, and so I got to looking up equinoxes. So I was on Wikipedia. And I was looking at these charts of these different basically lunar mansions, and so I was looking at the different stars that the moon would make its stops, you know, or it makes its home for, you know, 2-3 day period. And I was looking at like this star they call Artha in Hindu. And I was like, that's fire. So the rishis of the Rig Veda when they describe fire and made this name fire, was it Agna? Yeah, Agna. Agna's fire. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, this is what they're talking about. They're talking about a star in the constellation of Taurus. And, you know, and so I kept going down the list, and they had the star names in various languages. And so I kept recognizing deities in what we would call the Eddian pantheon. I'm like, oh, my goodness. So this is what the Bible's talking about, when you turn your eyes toward the host of heaven. And You know, I knew that people looked at like they. I know they worship in Vedic astrology. They talk about praying to a particular planet to affect its effect. You know, change its effect or behavior toward the native. But when I started looking at that, I said, this is way bigger than I thought. You know, this is an entire deeper system of worshiping the creation at its most fine level. So I mean, to me, I saw how good astrologers they were to notice these minute effects of stars in the compilation, but at the same time, upon noticing the compilation, they fell in awe and worshiped it.
Right, like we don't recognize even the work that it took for these different asterisms to come together and form the constellations that we know. We just think, oh, well, there's always been the 12. There hasn't always been the 12. For instance, it's common knowledge among astrologers who study it that Libra is one of the newest constellations of the zodiac.
Hmm.
It was actually it went from Virgo to Scorpio. That's why the two glyphs look very similar.
Mm-hmm.
So one glyph has the tail tucked in, which is Virgo, and the other one has the tail coming out. So the actual claws for the scorpion at one point were the scales that we now associate with Libra.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these things kind of evolve and have evolved over time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of great work went into that, and I guess that the ancients were started out at a very high level of astrology from at the dawn of time. That's the way I could only understand because all the ancient writings that I said you can't know too much, but I could say they knew much more than I believe the common person does today.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, well, yes and no. There's been a trade-off. I think one thing is certain, you know, they didn't necessarily have to worry about Hell's Kitchen or American Idol. There was no other entertainment once nightfall came beyond the stars and the campfire in the early stages of our civilizations. And I think, so there was a lot of study, a lot of attentiveness to what happened in the night sky. That's one. I think one other powerful distinction is that this kind of learning was not necessarily in the hands of the population. It was either the kingly class or the priestly class, and mainly the priestly class, because they even, many civilizations, picked the king.
Right.
So it wasn't, you know, the common person, I think, still now, the common person of our time, is in many ways much more educated than the common person from those eras. You didn't know jack. All you knew is that someone would point to you and be like, oh, it's your time to die. But what? No, boom, you're dead. You have to make your sacrifice, or you may have seen it as an honor. You may have thought it was a way to bring your family honor to have to do something for the king or for the country. But you didn't negotiate one sense of choice, and you may not have understood everything that you needed to know. There may not have been even the same level of literacy among the common people. There wasn't, actually. So we really have to recognize that as too. I mean, a big issue. There's a lot of things that we kind of share openly now, we're even talking about on the radio, that would have horrified priests.
Perhaps. Like you said earlier, you know, everybody's sitting around the campfire watching the night sky.
Mm-hmm.
So even if they didn't get a formal education from the priest or the monarchical class, as the monarchical class and the priesthood class, so, I mean, over time they will be able to pick up quite a bit.
know. Maybe. I mean, that's. But I think there was a vested interest in not letting people know. I mean, I think one of the key shifts of the modern era, whether it's good or bad, I can't evaluate it quite yet. But one of the key shifts of the modern era is that more people can know things and do know things that once were very esoteric. Even the Pythagorean theorem that a elementary school girl or boy can learn was something only known by the most learned.
Yes, those are mysteries, right. I'm not
doubting.
Yeah,
I mean, they were seen as mysteries, understood as mysteries, for lots of different reasons that many times we've lost. And I think that's kind of the trade-off we've been kind of working out, and I think that's why we also have the lasting legend and story of the Illuminati. And by legend, I am not wholly dismissing it. I mean, there's some challenges and things that we can talk about with it, but mm-hmm. When I say the legend, it is something that is part of our spiritual, cultural, and literal imagination
mm-hmm.
and history. And so we maintain that, you know, there's still these lasting secret organizations, and there are.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them, we still don't know. I mean, what's amazing to me is people, like, believe that they can really identify all the secret organizations. I'm like, dude, you don't probably know half of them.
That's right.
I'll tell you something. I actually have been in a Kabbalah group, a study group. I mentioned that to you.
Right.
For 12 years. We have met in some of the most posh apartments and houses in Manhattan and Brooklyn and Staten Island. People who have millions and millions of dollars and influence. And no one knows about us. We're not secret.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, no one knows about our group. You know, so I think it's funny. People, you know, come up and say, you know, well, you know, it's the Illuminati or it's this group, it's the Bilderberg group. I'm like, that's the one you know.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to say that, you know, your whole life is being decided in secret. It's that we really are still dealing with aspects of knowledge that aren't in the general public, and aspects of knowledge that we also have to wonder should be in the general public. I mean, I always ask people that too, like, well, like, we, you know, knowledge should be for everyone. And I'm, you know, I kind of look and say, okay, knowledge should be for everyone. This person over here, you see that guy over there? Yeah. I don't think he knows what country he's in. We should trust him? I mean, he doesn't even know the temperature. You think we should trust him? I mean, we should trust him with, you know, certain kinds of information?
I certainly agree. Knowledge has, matter of fact, the person has to have a certain, like I said, level of wisdom to be able to handle that knowledge. What is he going to do with that information?
Correct.
But you brought up earlier how certain kinds of knowledge is out that wouldn't be out. However, would you venture to say that people today wouldn't know what to do with that knowledge? Reason why is part of the reason why the common person is trusted with it. Because, you know.
Yeah. Well. I would think. Well, something I think has been lost in our education. And when I say something, I mean specifically, we are not looking at the work of education as a work and study in character. We have become so focused on the reign of quantity. We have become so focused on the reign of the manifest that we don't know how to deal with the mystery and the unmanifest, whether we want to call that God or not. And what really describes more of your future than almost anything else, and this is really the work of astrology, is your character. And if you haven't done a critical examination of your character and to look at really what kind of person you are and your aspirations to the kind of character you want to be, then you are missing significant clues on your destiny. And it's not enough talked about in schools, particularly, about character.
Right.
All you know, people are just learning things by rote, and, you know, they don't necessarily have an appreciation for beauty, for creativity. Like, for instance, well, I don't know this, and I'm not trying to get deep in your business, but do you have children, Charles?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I was just going to illustrate, you know, if you were to ask your child, or even ask, like, your nieces and nephews or the average child, sign your name for me, write in cursive for me. Chances are they wouldn't be able to do it if they were born after 1990, definitely after 1995. And you might be like, well, so what? You can't sign your name. Well, let me tell you what the problem is in not being able to sign your name, beyond being able to just make a clear statement of your character. Your handwriting became a unique way to articulate who you were.
Right.
That's one. And two, the work, the craftsmanship that was required in just signing your name became a way of reflecting on a very subtle level who you were and how you thought of yourself and how you wanted to present yourself to the world. So if you don't have even on that basic level of reflective consciousness on your identity, we don't even have it in even far deeper things. And so that really kind of complicates how we talk about who people are and what they can become and what they do become.
I see. Mm-hmm. Right. Because I had never looked at handwriting, you know, in Canadian. I mean, I have, you know, looked at graphology, but as just a means of assessing personality, you know, I have a book and I did a little analysis on that. But people don't write that much anymore. I mean,
that's
even
true.
When I write my
notes. Look what they're doing. They're doing something where it's all kind of digitally flatlined. I mean, the digital world, for making life easier, also streamlines most aspects of individuality.
Right. I mean,
it makes
when I write my notes
far more
program,
uniform.
I do them handwritten. For some reason, I find greater fulfillment in writing them out.
Mm-hmm.
For this one, I typed over half of it, but it just wasn't the same.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go on.
Oh, go ahead. I just couldn't understand why.
Right. I mean, like, even though I do astrology charts by computer, just because it expedites things. When I'm looking and interpreting a chart, I write things out by hand. I put it in through my own body so that I'm looking at the chart and bringing it to life by using the activation of my breath and my hand. That's where things really come alive. And we have forgotten that human agency is a reflection of the divine, and by virtue of being a reflection of the divine man and woman, we activate things. We activate energies in inanimate and animate matter. This is why animals love us when we're at our best. You know, our pets kind of thrive on the energy and attention that we give, because this is our destiny. This is what character allows us to do, which is to refine, develop, and share our light.
Wow. Yeah, because I have noticed that whenever I would write out some aspects from the screen, because sometimes, you know, I might not, you know, I just write them out and I'm going to look at some things. It seems like the aspects handwritten on paper somehow have some different kind of inherent effect on me that the screen whatever didn't have. Matter of fact, I'm willing to say looking at a horoscope to me is better than a photograph. That's the most weird thing I've noticed lately. But I don't, you
mm-hmm.
know, guess I'm beginning to unbeknownst to myself venture into esoteric astrology. But astrology itself is esoteric, so what does that mean, you know? But I mean, I guess, you know, that's something I would learn, you know, if I, you know, throughout my education. And speaking of education, you know, I know you founded the Astrological Career Institute, and
mm-hmm.
you, I mean, talk more about in this segment about how you prepare and educate people for practicing astrology, but professionally or just by helping them be able to apply this divine science, this science to their lives.
Yeah, so the Astrology Career Institute was the tandem work of myself and a Harvard MBA who approached me seeing that I had been offering classes in astrology about an idea. And he asked me, essentially, had I thought about how I dealt with astrology in terms of as a business model. And I had, and shared some of my insights. And he said, would you mind collaborating with me to have a program that would help astrologers build their business while simultaneously learning astrology? And the net result became the Astrology Career Institute. And so one thing that the Astrology Career Institute does that I'm very proud of, as versus many other institutes that are out there who are also very good but don't do the same way, is that it combines business principles with actually learning astrology. And I thought that was particularly important for me as a person of color to headline a program for everybody, and I have people, students from around the world who have enrolled in this program or graduated from this program, so that they not only benefit from astrology, have business principles that they can use and build their business, but also that it broadens the spectrum of the people who are involved in astrology. I told you 99% of the people I've met in the world of astrology are not people of color.
Right.
So my goal is very clear, and that is to get as many people studying and learning about astrology as I can. And that is one way I do it, at the Astrology Career Institute.
Awesome. I think I shared one of your presentations that you, you gave, that you posted on your blog about astrology. There was some interesting things I, you know, had a chance to see that I had never seen in your textbooks that I had
like
read.
Like what? Which one?
It's I don't have it right in front. Yes, I do have it on another window. But is when you gave it a I think a school in New York, was it the Brooklyn College or?
Oh, yeah. So my talk.
Yes, it's a
at,
talk.
BMCC, the Borough of Manhattan Community College.
That's the one, right.
Yeah, I was substituting for a dear friend of mine, Amy Jo Goddard, who teaches a spirituality course and at the college. And I went in and talked about astrology. And, you know, my trajectory as an astrologer who came to astrology as a skeptic. And one thing I just wanted to say, I know Jo Levesque mentioned about coming from skepticism. But one thing I like to still say is I still maintain a healthy amount of skepticism in a lot of different things. It's just kind of my natural temperament. If someone, if an astrologer were to look at my chart, he or she would see it. So, you know, some people already have some of the basic information out there, but for people who want to piece it together, you know, they can contact me and I'll gladly share my information. But essentially, there's some aspects of astrology I'm still skeptical of for a couple of different, you know, several reasons. One form of astrology is called mundane astrology,
mm-hmm.
which focuses on, you know, el mundo, the world. And there are a lot of astrologers who kind of cast their eye at politics without being forthright about their own political inclinations. When I say political inclinations, that whether they're liberal or left or right-leaning. So So that influences their astrology. So I remember during the last presidential election in 2008, I remember the number of astrologers who were like, you know, Obama's not going to win the primary. It's going to be Hillary. And they had their sound reasons looking at the two charts. And they could break it down. But I was looking at the data. I wasn't looking at the astrology.
Mm-hmm.
I also felt like they were not looking at the data. They were looking at their opinions and using that to inform their astrology. So I was like, yeah, I think Obama's going to take it. And they're like, no, it's Hillary because of blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay. So, and then when Obama did take it, the primary, they thought he was going to lose because of still X, Y, and Z, and that we should have gone with Hillary. Well, the day after the election, I was the guy who would go on these various websites and say, like, you predicted X, Y, and Z because of this. What happened?
Right.
And I think we should have a skepticism. Like, I like to hear from my clients about my predictions because I like to know when I get things right. I also like to know when I get things wrong. You know, and I think, you know, some people maintain that astrology is a science. I know what they mean. I agree with the sentiment, but I don't agree with the word. Science, as we understand it in modern parlance, is not just knowledge. That's literally, because I know you seem like you're a philologist, that you just love the study of words. So you know probably that science literally means knowledge, as scientia, you know, the translation from
Latin.
The Greek and the Latin.
Latin, I thought it was
especially from the Latin.
Yeah.
So with it meaning knowledge, the classical phrase is clear, but the modern phrase means that you have to have replicable results based on observable data. That is not what astrology is. So when astrologers say, well, it's a science and we can get it down to a science, much like we can get some aspects of biology or chemistry down, I think they're leaning toward error.
Yeah.
Because that's not exactly how it works. Knowledge becomes more intuitive, and it's not just about replicable results. It's about results that find a consistent spectrum of meaning. And the spectrum of meaning might be broad by scientific designations, but it still works within that spectrum. So when these mundane astrologers attempt to peg and say, like, well, I can look at XYZ factors and say with certainty that this is what's going to happen, I actually think they're engaging in a false practice.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're right. The way I use astrology, the word science, I'm looking at it in from a more, to me, my thing is about antiquity. And I'm looking at this, it's this wisdom and it's all these things you put together. But the modern way people think today, when they hear science, they're thinking being able to put a bunch of ingredients together and get easily reproducible or predictable results. You know, like rationality and irrationality.
Correct.
You know, like rational, because rational numbers or rational things are predictable. And people don't
correct.
Like irrationality because you don't know what you're going to get.
Exactly.
And so it is. With astrology, it's somewhat irrational. It's a combination of irrationality and rational. So you can't get all factors to come together in exactly the same way much of the time. And it's just like the ability to interpret the symbols and look at the circumstances in which, you know, things are taking place, like you were saying you were doing with the other people in the think tanks you were discussing with concerning the presidential election.
Right.
And those people couldn't think. Like looking at you know all the different factors, and they put their own, like I said, their own politics, and was when it gets in biblical, so they call it eisegesis. They were reading
right.
into the text what they wanted
right.
to see, you know. But nobody
right.
ever gets.
And I think. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, no, go ahead.
And no one ever gets what were you going to say?
Oh, accused of using exegesis. Is it the Greek
right.
church?
Right, yeah, that's exactly right. I think I think that's where we often go wrong. And I think it's using all the factors. The one thing, the why I think some astrologers do better with personal horoscopes, you know, when they're doing it for their clients, at least I can talk about for myself. I don't usually know the people unless they've been longstanding clients, so I don't have the same vested interest. So there's no meta-narrative I'm trying to make fit with the chart.
Right.
I don't have a stake. You know, this person, I may never hear from this person again. So if I say, oh, you hate women, or it seems like your chart, I probably would never be that blunt, but I might say you might have some difficulties dealing with women, your chart might suggest. I mean, I can kind of say that pretty clearly because, I mean, he's not dating my sister.
Right.
I'm not trying to angle him or this particular person to deal with me.
Right.
So it's just, you can just focus on the facts rather than the assumption of what the facts should look like. You know, I like Hillary, right, so I should have Hillary. You know, that's what I think was happening. Or I like Obama, and I think Obama should win. Yeah, but, you know, you do have to look at those factors. Like, when I do write about Mitt Romney, one of the things I will say, I've been planning to write about him for a minute and blog about him, is I don't like him. So I'm going to be that. I'm not going to try to be objective. I can look at the dynamics between our chart and understand why I don't like him. And that would be part of my analysis. So I'm not even going to pretend to be objective and say, like, well, this is just, I think he's not going to win because blah, 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 blah. No, this is, you have to be honest about where you are. I mean, that's one thing I did learn from my studies in Afrocentricity, is that you really have to admit to your biases.
Right.
And not try to sweep them under.
Right. And I think that's a problem we have in our culture, is people will, or maybe any culture, but people will not recognize that conflict of interest when they're doing a chart, when they're doing that type of analysis, looking at a chart.
Right.
When I'm looking at people, I'll just say, you know, I have a problem with this particular placement, this house place. And
right.
And just say, you know, it just doesn't work well with me, and I can just go proceed. But a lot of people, like I said, they would try to say, oh, no, it has nothing to do with all of that. It's these
right.
other
it should
things.
Be objective. And I went through that a lot. I mean, one thing, I know we're coming close to the time, but one thing that was very liberating, I've been to India twice, and I study casually Vedic astrology, which is, just for our listeners, very different, yet similar to Western astrology. It uses a sidereal zodiac, which is from the actual point of the constellations, not the signs, because there's a difference between the two. And it's focused on the moon. There's a lot of little things. But one of the things is that it's a lot more intuitive, and the astrologers definitely are more, they acknowledge how they are part of the quote-unquote science. So an astrologer will just tell you, no, I can't see you today. And you,
right.
But we have an appointment. It was for 2:00. Yeah, but not today. And you won't know why. And you kind of get all bent out of shape, like, well, it's supposed to be today. What happened? It may be that the astrologer realizes he can't see clearly today. Maybe because he had an argument with his wife, or maybe because he's not feeling well, or because she is caught up in some spiritual work or have been fasting all day and is distracted. But we have this expectation, along with this quote-unquote professionalism that has come with astrology, that it should be just objective and clean, and you should be able to do exactly for one client as you do for the other. And it really does happen with different gradations of moments.
Right.
You
right,
know, astrology really is ultimately, in my opinion, from what I've observed, deeper appreciation of the moments that either have come before, have come now, or based on the two, what is likely to come.
This is African Conversations, and we're with Samuel Reynolds of the Astrology Career Institute, and we'll be right back after these messages.
your knowledge beyond the book, here's every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. We are a literary society dedicated to the study of African-based psychoanalytical texts. We hope you will join us as we delve into the inner working of our African consciousness. African Knowledge Beyond the Book, every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com.
Listen to Love in Black with Charles and Jolivet on the Tribal Family Station on blogtalkradio.com.
There we will share our experiences and our insights on marriage and love, sex, respect, and honor. We're on every Thursday evening on the Tribal Family Station.
Listen in to African Conversations on the African Knowledge Network, where we will converse with researchers about matters significant to the African diaspora community. Join us on Facebook on the African Conversations community page. Enjoy the dialogue on African Conversations on blogtalkradio.com. And we're back with Samuel Reynolds of the Astrology Career Institute, and here to give us some final remarks. And could you please share with us, Mr. Reynolds, more about how people can contact you at the Astrology Career Institute?
Yes. First, I'd just like to thank you and Jolivet for having me on your program. I really enjoyed it. It's been kind of a long day, but it brought me a lot of joy to really kind of connect, especially the fun we had at the beginning. You know, kind of joking. So you really do create a great atmosphere. So really thank you from the bottom of my heart for allowing me to be on your show. And you can reach me, among the best ways to reach me is through email. And the email I am using these days is return2thesource, all one word, returntothesource@gmail.com. You also can reach me at Samuel F, as in Fred Reynolds, @gmail.com. Both of them work. But Return to the Source also hooks you up to my website, which is return2thesource.com. And my telephone number is 484-727-8277. Again, that's 484-727-8277. And if you have a text-enabled phone, I will be able to get to you faster. If you do not have that and you can only leave a voicemail message, then please do that, but only if you don't have email or a text-enabled phone.
Well, thank you, Sam, and I appreciate you for coming on African Conversations. It's really been a blast. I look forward to having you on whenever some new issues arise, and we could definitely use some of your wisdom. And I look forward to seeing many of your blogs and rereading them. I enjoyed them very much.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for having me.
All right.
And thank you, sister.
Blessings, blessings. Thank you.
Blessings.
Thank you all for tuning in to African Conversations tonight with our guest Samuel Reynolds, and we look forward to seeing you on our next episode. Look for us on Facebook on facebook.com/African Conversations, and good night.
brain like Billy Pucky, leaving you in a better frame of mind. Drowning out the voices that fuck you, but I promise to be good to your little boy. Put your hands together, come on and stop the beating. Put your hands together, come on and stop the beating. Lord, put your hands together, come on and get at me.
to be free.
Free your mind
and your ass will follow.
The kingdom of heaven is within.
Free your mind and your ass will follow.
The kingdom of heaven is within.
Free your mind, your ass will follow.
The kingdom of heaven is within.
I don't understand.